Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments, you can email them in to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And, of course, this is my very exciting once-a-month time of the month to be with Dr. Brian Hooper. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, Bonnie. It's good to be with you.
Yes. It's been a long month since we last spoke. But,
it has been.
You know, as long as it seems, it goes so fast. You know, so many things happen in 1 month, right?
Exactly.
Or maybe that's because I'm getting older.
Yep.
That it just seems
no,
like it's going
older.
Faster.
Scratch that.
Okay, thank you, Brian. So
you're welcome.
I'm really glad you can join us tonight because so much has been going on in the world lately that women need to hear some comforting words. And we've been talking about this the last couple of weeks, you know, on my show with other guests who have been here, right?
Yeah, sure. Right. Yeah. No,
you're a counselor, you're a pastoral therapist, counselor and psychotherapist. Do you find that people are feeling a little beaten down these days, you know, with all the terrible things going on?
You know, it's interesting. I was having a conversation with somebody recently, and I said to the person, I didn't realize until after the Orlando shooting how often, just in the last year, I have been engaging in hypervigilant kind of behavior. I go into a restaurant, I notice who's around me, I notice where the exits are, and I wasn't even aware that I was doing that, but it sort of hit me all of a sudden that I'm doing that more and more. I'm vigilant for danger around me. And the other person agreed with that as well. And I think more and more people may be experiencing that. And that doesn't mean they're paranoid, because when there's so much going on in the world that's so hard, it's not surprising that we're vigilant and, you know, take extra precautions. But the other thing is to recognize that, you know, we don't want to live in fear, and we need to think about the precautions that we're taking so that we're taking good ones. Ones that are really helpful, and that can help people to, you know, settle into being a little bit more comfortable if they find themselves being anxious.
I just think these are very tough times, and I know every generation has its challenges, and I've lived through a lot of them now, and
mm-hmm.
you see different things going on. I know that when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, I never really thought the country would ever recover from those days. This country was so divided and so split, and
mm-hmm.
the young against the old, and the hippie movement, and all the student protesters. And it was so discouraging, because in my own head I thought, how can this ever become a united nation again? And yet we did overcome it. But since that time, we've had so many other incidents happening, all the way thinking about some of the real tragedies, like hurricanes and, you know, things that you can't avoid, natural disasters. Like, for instance, what went on in Virginia this weekend, or West Virginia, was just so
right.
horrifying to
right.
me
yeah.
that you go to bed
yes.
overnight thinking tomorrow's a new day, and then you end up dying and drowning out of something
yeah.
you have no control over whatsoever. Or, of
right.
course, the Orlando
yeah.
shooting
yeah.
where you go out to have a good time at a bar and
yeah.
you know, you're shot down along with a whole group of people. Or even that Christine Grimmie, who was the singer the night before the
right.
shooting, who got shot down. And
yeah.
it's just like one
yeah.
incident after another incident.
And I think, Bonnie, as you're mentioning this, you know, it's not just the physical things that happen. It's the mean-spiritedness that we see around us coming and being fomented, you know,
mm-hmm.
by certain factions within our political system. That's really hard, you know, because that's no way for any group of people to live from a place of fear. And it's almost as if we're being encouraged to live from a place of fear. And I always ask myself, well, who benefits from the populace being in fear? And I'm not going to, you know, pontificate politically tonight. All I'm saying is just, We all need to think about that. Who's benefiting from fear-mongering?
I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of this fear-mongering is realities for people now, and that's what concerns me. You know, I just feel like you, that you're not consciously maybe always on guard, but I certainly
mm-hmm.
feel like I have to be a little more careful. I have to look a little more when I'm going someplace. I have to watch who the audience
yeah.
is.
Sure.
Because there's all
sure.
kinds of craziness going on out there, and my heart goes out
sure
to people who are just victimized. But let's go back to the Orlando shooting, because there was a lot of news in the news about that this week, and I wanted
mm-hmm.
to get your opinion, you know, as
okay.
someone who's part of, you know, an understanding the situation, because you hear so many things about Omar Mateen. Was he gay? Was he not gay? Was he frustrated, married gay man? There's a lot of different
mm-hmm.
theories going on about this. It had nothing to do with ISIS. It was his own self-hatred. So I wanted to get your view on this.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think what we need to remember is that it was a gay nightclub that was targeted, and not just any nightclub, that as I understand the news, that there had been anti-gay statements that had been made by the shooter. And that's what we do know, at least I think objectively right now. Was he a conflicted gay man himself? Maybe. It wouldn't surprise me if he was. If he wasn't, it's still a crime against people just for who they are. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that we're still having to overcome. When I meet people in my own state who are still having to hide who they are because they come from a small town, and they would be rejected by their family if they simply knew who they love. And that's a dreadful thing to have to live with.
Yes, and it seems like his father was very homophobic. In fact, his father refused to allow him to be buried or go to his burial or take his body because of the fact that he was gay. And when you grow up in that kind of environment where gay is not a possibility, and I think we've both worked with men who come from that kind of background where there's that kind of cultural difference.
Yep.
And how,
well, the hatred gets turned in. The rejection of others gets turned in on oneself in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's really very sad, you know, that people have to live a life that they're not destined for. And I just feel that really has to take its effect on anybody's personality, anybody's psyche. To be living a life that isn't your destiny has to be very difficult. I really don't understand how people can do it. And yet I know they do all the time. But
well,
I think it would have to be a very difficult thing to deal with.
They do with varying degrees of, quote, successfulness, as well as, you know, varying degrees of emotional health and well-being. If they can at least affirm who they are, even those who can't be out, that's a step in the right direction. But it would be a dreadful thing to simply hate who one is at their core and try to live with that your whole life. I couldn't do it.
And that's why I think that it's so important that we stand up for gay rights, and that I think that we have that obligation to stand up for people so they can live an authentic life. And I know that a lot of this plays into our situations as far as being married to gay men who aren't able to live an authentic life because they're in fear of their families finding out, their religions finding out.
Mm-hmm.
They're brought up from the time that they're young to be taught that, you know, this is something that's deviant, or if you do something like this, it's dirty, and we don't want to be affiliated with you or associated with you. You're an embarrassment to us. You'd be ashamed to us. And I say, even in this day and age, in 2016, it's still going on. Wouldn't you say that?
Oh, absolutely. I attended the Pride Festival in Nashville yesterday, and of course there were the hate mongers that were across the street with their bullhorn, quoting scripture verses out of context at folks, trying to shame them and telling us that we were all going to hell. You know, and to know that many people have come from families where when they go to church on Sundays, that's what they've been hearing their whole lives.
And that comes from a lot of different areas, a lot of different churches. I know that's certainly not from your church. And there are other modern-day churches that are very open-minded to this, but that's not necessarily the vast majority of churches, right?
Well, I would say it tends to be the case among what I sort of jokingly refer to as the standard brand denominations, you know, United Presbyterian, Episcopal, United Methodist, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. They're all accepting of gay and lesbian people. Some of them provide marriage rights, some don't. I'm very pleased to say that the announcement was made for the parish that I serve that the church council has authorized the pastors henceforth to marry people regardless of their sexual orientation.
Is that something recent or something that's been
going on
for a while?
No, that was in light of the Orlando shooting. The question was asked, what can we do to help? Well, we can affirm and endorse gay marriage that our pastors preside at, so to help, you know, ultimately, now these are my words, to provide the same dignity that we do for straight members of the church. We want people to live with integrity, then we need to honor their relationships and support them in living with integrity.
Why do you think that religiously, and I mean this goes across the board from Christians to Jews to Muslims, so there's, I'm not singling anybody out, please believe me when I tell you that, but why is there such, because you know it because you've studied it, why is there this same doctrine going across, you know, fundamentalism religions, that homosexuality is such an abomination? Because I haven't really seen it in the Bible. You know, I've looked for it. I'm not saying, I mean, I don't see it being made into such a big, tremendous thing as how people are interpreting it. So what am I missing?
Well, so in the Judeo-Christian religions, it goes back to property and progeny. Who has, so in other words, it's the same rules around, it's all about controlling who gets the property rights that's passed down through the male lineage. So it's to ensure the propagation of the people, and that property is passed down to the rightful heir, one generation to the next. It all centers around that, and it all spins off from that.
Well, I don't know. I think they've really gone above and beyond any kind of expectations with this, because there are certain things that
in
you
the
know,
modern...
very distinct in the Bible, and you know, certain for all religions. But I don't see this where this becomes such an issue for all of them. Do you?
Yeah. It's how they read certain passages out of the Bible. In other words, we don't live in a day and age, at least not in the United States, where women are the property of men, right?
Right.
We don't have a bride price where to marry you, I would have to give your father, you know, a certain amount of money or a certain number of sheep and goats. We don't do that anymore. But these laws that were not about orientation, because they didn't even understand sexual orientation, they were about certain behaviors that were outlawed at that time. But there's lots of behaviors that were outlawed then, like sowing two kinds of seed in the same field and wearing clothing of mixed fabric. That all these rules, all these things were against certain rules. And those have been abrogated. That's not practiced today, certainly by the vast majority of Christians and even among Jews, unless a person is ultra-Orthodox, they don't practice that kind of thing either. Many of the rules they don't practice, I should say. So it's,
and yet they're still holding on to the anti-gay sentiments, even though a lot of those rules are in practice.
Right. Well, because they all religions tend to cherry pick certain verses out of their sacred books, and it always supports a male dominated hierarchy. It keeps certain people in certain positions in charge, and we see that across the board, no matter what the religion is. So it's interesting how religious rules often serve not the promulgation of the ultimate faith underneath it, but what it really serves is the status quo in keeping people who have the power in power.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things, you know, June is always a very big month for Gay Pride Month, and I think
a lot of
our women really feel they don't understand this, and, you know, they're new into the situation. They're just finding out that their husbands are gay. They don't even understand the whole issue of gay. Now we have gay pride that they have to look at, and
mm-hmm.
they just don't get
mm-hmm.
it. So one of the things that they can't get, and maybe you can explain this a little bit, Brian, is that when a woman comes to me and she says, my husband's been married to me for 25 years, you know, and maybe we haven't had the best sex life, but we've had the best friendship, you know, I've had
mm-hmm.
to sacrifice my sex, you know, why is it such an issue for him? You know, is that what marriage
mm-hmm.
is about? Or what about all the other stuff that we have? What about the children, the family, you know, the fact
mm-hmm.
of what a house
mm-hmm.
that we share all these different things together? Why now is gay popping up out of nowhere and now it has to become an issue? Why, why is sex so much more important than our family? And this is a very common question that women ask. So I thought maybe you could address that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's really not about just about the act of sex itself. The woman in the marriage perceives herself as heterosexual. Her orientation is towards a man that may not be the best. They may not be having the best sex in the world, but she's with the opposite sex, the sex that she wants to be with. For him, if he's gay, he's mismatched. He's at his core, there's a longing to be in the company of a man in terms of the relationship, not in the company of a woman. So it's not simply just a matter of sex, it's a matter of the heart as well. And I think that that's the thing that's difficult for the for women to get past and understand. Yes, he did marry you and loved you when he did. Not in love in the way that you were probably with him, but you know, most men that I have worked with have denied who they are at their core. They've denied their essential orientation. They thought it would go away if they gave it much thought at all. They thought they were doing the right thing when they got married. And many of them just sort of tried to ignore this attraction towards men and this longing to be with men. And they were excited about the idea of being married, the idea of having children, and being a family man. And so that's how they got into it. But they couldn't keep a lid on it forever. And it often begins to come out when they are approaching or in midlife.
I just had an email come in for you. It's from a woman named Miriam. And she says that her husband is leaving her after 24 years. But I can't tell people why he will not allow me to. Is this fair?
Well, I don't think it's fair. It's as much your story as it is his story. I think there may be times when it might be in the woman's best interest to collaborate with the man, to have a time frame in which she's going to share this. But if, say, he's in a job position where he's going to lose his job if he's out, and that means she loses all support because there's no income coming in, then it's not necessarily in her best interest that, you know, she be telling everyone. So on the one hand, you know, it's your story to tell as well. But on the other hand, there may be reasons that she might not want to. Now, those are my initial thoughts, Bonnie. What are yours?
And I see where you're coming from on this. It's just that I'm not saying you have to go to the highest mountain and shout it out or put it in the newspaper. But I feel that once your husband's no longer living in the closet, that you don't have to live in his closet that he was in. If he's leaving you because of the fact that he's having, you know, going to fulfill his life as a gay man now, then you have that right to tell people, because I see what happens, and this is very common. The woman agrees not to tell anyone. Sometimes it's not a matter that she agrees, it's just she doesn't want to tell anyone because she's embarrassed by it. But sometimes the husband puts pressure on her not to tell anyone because, like you say, it'll affect a job. But what happens is that people who are part of their support system, extended family members, close friends, when they don't know the truth, the blame seems to go to the woman. And the children feel sometimes that the woman's responsible for breaking up the family. I've seen this happen a lot, where kids will turn on their mothers, saying, you didn't try hard enough, why is dad leaving? And you can say as much as you want that we have differences or that things came up, but it's still like, you're taking some of that responsibility when I feel that it's not your responsibility at all. The marriage didn't break up for anything that you've done wrong. He's coming out of his closet. Why do you have to stay in the closet? So I think you have to be discreet.
Yeah, exactly. As I was saying, it's her story to tell as well. And, you know, she may need to think about where and when she wants to share it. But
I'm not saying you have to sell it to the world, but I do think that being gay, it has a certain amount of responsibility that goes with it. And if you've been living a life that's not yours or authentic for 20, 30 years, you know, living under false pretenses because you weren't able to come to terms with it, now that you have and that now that you're out on your own because you don't want to live in that marriage anymore, and I can understand that. But your wife has the right also to have to survive the way she needs to. And I think a lot of times men don't understand this. You know, they're saying, you can't tell people this story. You know, my parents will turn on me. This will turn on me. And so now the woman, once again, is like stifled back into his closet that he's not even living in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like a double hurt. I mean, that's my opinion from the women that I've worked with.
Yeah.
But I think you want to be, you know, think about it before who you tell. I think you can definitely tell your own support system, whether it's your family, whether it's your close friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you tell people, you can't take it back, and that's fine, because I don't believe that it should be kept as a secret per se, because then we're giving still the message there's something wrong with being gay. And I think that's a bad message to give people, especially if you have children, and with the likelihood that maybe one of your children is going to be gay. Do we have to keep this a secret? Is it something evil or bad?
Right. I completely agree with you about that. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to keep secrets. There's a difference between a confidence and a secret. And secrets often are part of systems that are not healthy. And we don't want to promote that either. So you're exactly right. And I would again point out that, you know, you, by saying this, are making it very clear that you're not anti-gay. You know, and that's one of the things I appreciate about you, Bonnie, is that you know that you're here to help women who have found themselves married to gay men and who are, you know, recovering from a lot of hurt. But you're not against gay and lesbian people.
I had a lesbian daughter. You know,
I know, exactly.
Like I say, I've always been very pro-gay, but this is an issue that's not about being pro-gay or anti-gay. It's about an issue about being fair in a marriage under the circumstances.
Right, exactly.
And I really, my heart does go out to a lot of these guys who call me initially for help because I know they're hurting. I know they're living a life that isn't theirs to live, and they're scared and they're afraid. And I tell them that the best thing that you can do is be honest with your wife. You owe her the truth that if you love someone and you've made a commitment to her, and, you know, she's supposedly, when you tell me she's your best friend and she's a wonderful person, then you have to tell her why things aren't working. I think a lot of gay men don't understand, Brian, to be honest with you, they think that things are fine when they're not fine. And a lot of times what happens is that the woman who doesn't have that missing puzzle piece to tell her what's really wrong in the marriage, thinking that nothing she's doing is working.
She keeps thinking it's about her. Right, I know
exactly.
That. Exactly.
She keeps internalizing it.
Right.
And so do the children, by the way. You know, when the children find their parents aren't happy, and women tell me, I'm hiding it from them.
No,
you're not. Don't kid yourself in thinking your children don't know that you're not happy, right?
Well, and children, especially young children, begin to wonder what they have done that mommy and daddy are not happy. And this is regardless of if it's a gay straight marriage or if it's a straight marriage that isn't working well. When there is discord in the home between the parents, children often wonder what it is that they have done that mom and dad aren't getting along well.
Well, that's what happened to me. I came from a broken family, and my parents would wait till we went to bed at night to start fighting because they didn't want to upset the children. But their fighting did upset us. It kept us awake when we should have been sleeping. And inevitably, when there's nothing left to fight about because, you know, you're running out of issues, the children become the issues. And so we always internalized, my brother and me, that we were responsible for our parents' unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
And that really took its beating up on us, you know, when we were growing up. And I have three younger sisters who grew up in a single-parent home when my mother and father split up. And they came out far more well-adjusted than we were because they weren't feeling that guilt and responsibility and having to take care of our parents because we weren't making them happy or feeling what could we do better. And that's what I tell women, that if you're not happy, you cannot hide that from your children. You may put a smile on your face. The kids are very, you know, attentive. They can read you. They know the signals. And you may think you're crying when they're not listening, but you are crying and they are listening. And they know that you're
not happy. That's right.
I think that it's not only just affecting the woman, but, you know, men have to understand the far broader implications of not being honest with your wife. But I do see how many women do suffer. And I think, you know, I tell men, the one thing that if you can just be honest with your wife, even though she's going to be angry and it's going to be the worst day of your life and she's going to hate you at that moment, but you'll really appreciate further knowing that at least now I realize what the problem is, that I'm not the problem. And that's why it's so important to tell.
You know,
how do you do that to somebody who you're supposedly supposed to love, make them feel like they're responsible? And so that's what I'm talking about. It's not about being gay. It's about doing the right thing.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's about not playing games. And, you know, it even comes down to not only do I work with a lot of gay men who come to me for, you know, help and who I ultimately sometimes, you know, you end up with them, helping them. But I also work with some wonderful other men, gay men who are the other men. Are involved in this relationship.
Right.
I can think of at least a half a dozen this year that I've, you know, talked to who are so convinced that these men are going to leave their wives and leave their marriages. You know, they fall in love with them.
Right.
You know, because they're charmed by them and they think that this is the man I'm waiting for. And these men will say to them, see, you're the first man that's made me feel enough like I want to do something about it and accept myself for who I am. And they get hurt too. You know, it's
sure they do, because it's some men have real integrity and they will leave. Many, unfortunately, come from a place of fear, and the fear continues to control them, and they keep putting it off and putting it off and putting it off, and they never do it.
Exactly. And so the dysfunction goes on. But, you know, I'm hoping that in time, like people say, well, with the times changing, there must be a lot less of this going on. Do you feel there is?
Oh, it's, you know, I don't know if there's less or not. I mean, I don't know how to quantify that. I would hope as we're becoming more, you know, accepting overall as a society, it will happen less. I know that among younger gay men, they're coming out earlier and earlier. Oftentimes, you know, in junior high school, high school. But I also think it depends on the part of the country. Some places it's still just not, you know. I mean, I live in the South, and it's a lot of homophobia still.
And I don't, you know, I also say that you can change laws, but it takes a lot longer to change people's hearts. And
yes, it does.
I think that's
a really
important lesson because, for instance, even with civil rights and civil rights, the laws were changed back in the 1860s where, you know, black Americans were given the right to vote. They were given the right to be free. And yet that was the law on paper, but it certainly wasn't translated into anything for another 100 years at least. There was still so much persecution, the Jim Crow laws, right?
Right. And we've seen gerrymandering in order to, you know, keep people segregated. And, you know, even though redlining has been outlawed, that, you know, people find ways around that to still try to do the same thing.
It's very discouraging. And I think people say, well, it's totally different today. The gay people are out and they're proud and they're marching. Well, they are in big cities, but they're not doing it in other places because they have to fear the same kinds of problems. And when you see something that happened in Orlando where you're sitting in a gay bar just enjoying yourself, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, that, you know, 50 people are dead, then it makes you think, you know, Are things really changing out there? Are attitudes really changing that much? And I think it's a very scary world that, you know, for someone who has to be not part of the mainstream, whether it's their sexuality. I mean, there's a lot of discrimination now, misunderstandings about transgender people.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm,
it's confusing to a lot of people, including me. I mean, I try to be, I'm very open-minded about it. I still don't understand exactly how that happens so much.
No.
To be honest with you, was it happening all along? Did it happen 100 years ago? Was it always like that? People were caught and trapped in the wrong bodies? I mean, it just seems
like all of a sudden
it became such an issue now.
Well, people want to be able today to live authentically and with integrity, and there's more room to do it, even though it's not perfect. You know, and we also have the science to help them do that today that we didn't have before. But we've had, as the American Indians refer to them, you know, as two-spirit people for a long time, and that's their, you know, it's a term, as I understand it. This is not an area that I have expertise in, but as I understand it, it's the people who were perceived to be neither, you know, male nor female, that they were between the two roles in that culture. So a variant of the heteronormative standard that they had lived with. We have other examples out of from history. We have some interesting thing, monastic writings, interestingly enough, of gay men living in relationship and love for each other, and there's a lot of innuendos there without being real explicit, but it's pretty clear. And that, you know,
it's it's something that's just not happening now. This is something that's always been there.
It's always been there.
But on the transgender issue, do you think, you know, I just feel like all of a sudden this has come to the forefront, certainly in the last 10, 15 years. I really never heard about it before that, did you?
Yeah, well, we didn't talk about it much, but yeah, I mean, we heard about it occasionally, but it wasn't talked about much. There wasn't really the freedom for transgender people to be themselves, and they're still fighting for that today. I mean, my gosh, we've got, you know, how many states that have wanted to enact bathroom laws about where people pee because they're so concerned that, you know, people only pee in restrooms that correspond to the gender that's on their birth certificate.
And, yes, I know it is certainly a very controversial issue.
It's a law we don't need.
I don't know. It's very confusing for a lot of people. And I think that just understanding it in general, I think it will become more accepted in time. But I think it's just going to take time. I mean, look how long took.
Right, right.
You know,
and
I was growing up,
really.
It was something that you could never even discuss. I mean, it was something that I never knew anybody gay. Of course, I thought I didn't know anybody gay because they were not even allowed to even be gay. Of course, as I got older, many of the people I grew up with, I learned were gay.
But that was
something that nobody would talk about. You'd have to hide that fact. They would send you to a psychiatrist. They would try all kinds of terrible therapy with you. I mean, it was a very hard thing to go and say, I'm gay. I mean, it was totally unaccepted. And I grew up in a pretty liberal area in a city where you would think there'd be a lot more liberalism on this, but people were still very ignorant about it.
Well, remember, it wasn't that long ago that we removed being homosexual from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual as a mental illness. Yeah, so.
And that had to be scary for people growing up and being diagnosed as mentally ill because they were gay.
Of course.
You know, I just can't imagine all the hurt that so many people had to go through because they were born differently. And that goes for everybody, you know, no matter what minority you're part of, when you're not part of the mainstream. And people don't want to understand it, and people don't want to open up their minds to it. But I think, of course, once again, you see things much more today. Things are much more open because you have all this, you know, stuff out in the world on the internet, social media, television shows, you know, things that are being addressed, that I think that our children will grow up, you know, that this generation will grow up knowing so much more and feeling differently than we grew up because there's so much more information out there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, among the high school and college age people today, for the majority of them, even here in, you know, the Nashville area, but granted, Nashville's a little bit more progressive than the surrounding area, but, you know, they don't think twice about, they have gay friends, they have straight friends, they're more concerned that they have friends, period, than what a person's orientation is. Where when I went to school in Orange County, California, you know, if a person was out, that was rather scandalous. So, you know, we sort of hid from ourselves as well as hiding from each other.
And
if I could have printed
that was in
away,
Orange County, California.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I know when I lived in California in the 1960s, you know, 1968, that I never even met anybody gay before. And I went out there and I was 17 years old and I was like a fish out of water, having no clue. And I started meeting gay people there. And I was so uneducated about it, even in 1967, 68. I thought, oh, you know, the reason they're gay is because they had a bad time in life. They didn't have a mother who loved them enough.
Right.
And this was the thinking back then, that if you were gay, it's because you didn't have, you know, the right nurturing, the right mother, the right father. If only you had a loving family, you wouldn't have had to turn to this. And I used to feel so sorry for gay people. And I'll never forget that I met a guy, met up with a guy many years later. I used to go with him in high school for a short period. And as an adult, I met up with him in Florida. And, you know, he told me that he was gay. He told me that he was fine. You know, he's didn't come to terms with himself. And this is going back to around 1976, 77. And I went to visit him, and, you know, before I went to visit him, I said to him, oh, I'm so sorry that, you know, this happened to you. I really feel bad for you. And he said to me, and I was, by this time, you know, like 25 years old, 26, and he said to me, why do you feel bad for me? I said, because you're gay. He says, well, I don't feel bad for me. He says, you know, I think it's fine. Why are you feeling bad? I thought to myself, yeah, I guess you're right. Why am I feeling bad? I guess I was just feeling bad because I still feel that you're going to be persecuted. People are still going to pick on you. And that, you know, you'll miss out on certain things in life that your family has expectations for. Did you ever feel any pressure from your family, Brian?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, I knew what was going to be expected and really wanted to be able to deliver on that, but I also know I couldn't do that and have integrity. You know, my father was actually much more comfortable accepting who I am at the core when I came out. He was really rather brilliant with that. And you know, my mom still is, and at a very advanced age, still doesn't quite understand, and she's not sure that she really likes the idea, but she does, she's come to at least accept, you know, and that's fine, and she does love me, and so we're good, but she's not at a place where she could affirm who I am as a gay man.
But she's accepted it, right?
She's accepted it, right. And so she's doing the best that she can. And what more can I ask of her, right?
Right. She
I'm
grew up in a different
that.
Generation.
Right.
And this was something
exactly.
that people didn't talk about or didn't do. And
right.
so,
right.
you know, I guess it's really hard for people to change when they've been brought up a certain way. Which
it
is why
is.
I say you can
it's
change the
difficult.
Laws, but you have it's harder to change people's hearts.
Yeah.
And that takes
and
a lot longer.
And what ultimately
longer.
Changes people's hearts is when others get to know them for who they are. And that's
exactly.
that's the same that's true for, you know, other religious ideas where people share a common value of care for others, they can get past those differences and live, you know, in a civil way with one another.
I think that's part of the whole thing. I think a lot of prejudice is brought on by fear and by misunderstanding and by stereotypes. And certainly through the years, I've really had to fight that, especially on behalf of the, you know, gay community, when people would be so afraid to let gay people near their kids or gay teachers.
Right.
And, you know, my heart just ached for these people. You know, why would you think like that? You know, I would fight them and say, oh, you've got to be kidding me. You know, there's so many more straight pedophiles than there are gay pedophiles.
Exactly.
I mean, why aren't you afraid that a man who's straight is near your little girl? You know, why is it that, you know, it has to always become a gay thing when it has nothing to do with that? But these are the stereotypes that people were fighting all the time. And I think hopefully a lot of that has gotten better. You know, I think a lot of times maybe the media's exposed it more when you see people who you admire who are actors and actresses and singers and they're gay. And then they don't seem so dangerous anymore because people are, you know, more comfortable at least in admitting who they are. And
I kind of have to
bring up more role models to kids.
I have to chuckle because my mom, who's still not comfortable with me being gay, wouldn't want to miss an episode of Ellen. You know, she loves Ellen. And, oh, she does so much good for people, Mom will say. It's like, yeah, Mom, she does. Isn't that interesting? And oh, and then the little kid she has on her show, I just love watching that. Yeah, isn't that great? That's wonderful. So, I mean, I go over there and visit her, and if it's during Ellen's show, we watch it together. That's fine. Yeah.
But I do think it's going to take a long, you know, I don't think that people, when they get to their older age, if they haven't had the exposure or they've been living, you know, through a church, synagogue, mosque, or they have these youth, it's really hard to change them. So the most you can hope is not that
it's
they're going to necessarily love you, but they're going to be able to just accept the situation.
Right, yeah.
Without driving you crazy to change it.
Right.
Which I feel is the fairest compromise you can make under the circumstances. What hurts me is when I see families discommunicate children or throw them out or say they don't want to bother with you anymore.
Bonnie, the University of San Francisco has come up with some phenomenal research, and they've demonstrated now that where families simply accept their gay and lesbian children, not rejoice over it, you know, not say that they're in favor of it, just simply accept them. Where there is acceptance, dropout rate from school plummets. Drug abuse plummets, alcohol abuse plummets, homelessness, runaways plummet, promiscuity plummets, STDs plummet, simply from parents that say, you know what, I don't get it, but you're still my kid. I don't like it, I still don't agree with it, but I accept you. Just that alone. It can actually spare kids an awful lot of other terrible outcomes in life. It's amazing.
And it's so true. It's so true. I know that I have a nephew who I'm very proud of. He just graduated college, and he was running his LGBT, whatever all the initials, some extra initials, Q group on campus.
Right.
A lot of different initials. But, you know, when he graduated, everybody who was part of that group, they all had, you know, the strands that go around your neck. I don't know the correct terminology, but the different colored ones, you know, to represent their organization.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Okay.
He was very active from the time he was in high school with this. And very thankful, even though he comes, you know, from a family, not my side, but the other side, where the culture is a little iffy on this. His father was very accepting and loving. And because his family was loving and accepting, he grew up feeling so much more well-adjusted and able to be himself. So, yes, you don't have to love it. You don't have to go out to the parades with your kids. But if you can love them for who they are and not make that the issue, I think that's really what it comes down to. Sometimes it's really hard to say, yeah, I'm proud you're gay too. You know, as a parent, you may not necessarily feel that way, especially, you know, if you're an older parent. But as long as you can say, you know what, I understand you, I accept you for who you are, and I love you, you'll always be my child, even if I don't always understand what you're doing. You know, I think that's very healthy, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Absolutely. I'll take that over rejection any day.
So, and as we're winding down our program tonight, Brian, you said that maybe you could give our women a few tips about self-esteem, which is always an ongoing subject on this show.
Right. So I was thinking about the fact that this is Pride Month, you know, and it's and that comes out of what happened in June 28th in 1969 at Stonewall, where there were a police raid on a gay, lesbian, transgender club. And that was not unusual. That happened all the time. And the patrons, they rioted over the next few days. They'd had enough. And that was the beginning of the gay rights movement. And so I was thinking about that and how that led to people standing up for themselves and working to establish self-esteem. And then I thought about, you know, the women that you and I work with who have found themselves married to gay men, and I want to help support them in their own sense of self-esteem. Because let's face it, many of them, as you have said, well, what's wrong with me? Because they haven't understood what's going on with their husbands, right? Yeah.
Right.
So just a few ideas about really about self-esteem or pride, if you will, and that is that it's not necessarily always a feeling we walk around with, but it's a knowledge about ourselves. I like to say that parents can't give children self-esteem, but they can create an environment in which the child builds a reputation with her or himself. And that's really what self-esteem is. It is the reputation I build with myself. And that means I assess where I am. I make decisions about one foot that I need to put in front of the other, and then I do that, and then I say, wow, I did that. Good for me. I know I can do that, and I know I can take the next step after that. It's important to take a look and say, these are the things that I have accomplished, and I can take some satisfaction in that. I can be proud of that in my life. And I would encourage the women to do that, to not focus on what went wrong in the marriage, but rather, you know, who they are at their core and the reputation that they have with themselves. Make sense to you?
It does, and I think for a lot of women, you know, they've lost that or they never had it to start with. They have to either find it or re-find it. And I know that I had a wonderful guest on my show, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Marie Walker, who wrote a really good book, Unlocking the Secrets of Self-Esteem. And, you know, she works a lot with that. And her main theory, and I think you might agree with this, is that in order to get it, you got to give it. And meaning that self-esteem doesn't just come from feeling, how do you feel good about yourself? It's by doing and giving to others. You know, that if you put some, and I always tell people, if you put in a little more than you take out, it's going to be a better world. You know, life is there for you to grab. But you got to put a little bit, you know, back in. It's not just for taking, you have to give some too. And there's nothing like
really
what you do here every month for our women. You know, you help them, you volunteer to be here, you know, and that's how you build self-esteem, by realizing that you're putting yourself out, giving back, and, you know, doing some things for people also makes you feel good about yourself. Would you agree with that?
I would, and that ties into, you know, what I was saying about it's the reputation we build with ourselves by doing these very things, by reaching out and caring for others. And that's one of the best things that we can do when we're feeling down, is to lift up somebody else, because it will lift us up as well.
Exactly. And that's why it's a process. It's not something that happens overnight. And especially when you come out of these marriages, sometimes you're so battered down. And some of these relationships were not good relationships because you're living with someone who's living a life that he's very frustrated with. And he's not able to be honest with you. It's just easier to make you the victim or make you the cause of his unhappiness. And he'll say a lot of things to you that are untrue, but when you keep hearing them over and over and over again, you start believing them.
You might believe them.
Well, they say if you repeat a lie enough times, you start to believe it, right?
Right, right.
So if your husband keeps telling you that you're inadequate, you're too fat, you're too thin, you're too busty, you're too flat-chested, your breath smells, you smell, you know, there's nothing worse than attacking a woman in that way because you don't want to be with her. But, you know, you have to first now build yourself up, you know, and start all over again. Not even sometimes a lot of our women came from abusive families to start with. They came out of families where there was dysfunction, where there was a lot of hurt, and where there wasn't a real normal, you know, to role model yourself after. There could have been mental health problems, drug or alcohol problems, all kinds of problems. So you were moving from one frying pan into another frying pan. It just looked different.
Sure.
So you never grew up with any kind of feeling of goodness about yourself to start with. And now you have to go into a marriage that's going to make you feel even worse. So for some women, it's just a journey that's starting at the very beginning to find who you are. And that's where therapy really comes into play. And we have some wonderful therapists who are part of our network, including Dr. Hooper, who can really make you understand who you are and feel good about yourself. And, you know, Brian does therapy not only, I mean, he lives in Nashville, home of my favorite show that's coming back, I heard. But aside from that, he also does on channel ABC. And also, he does therapy by phone, by Skype. So you don't have to be in Nashville to be getting help from him. Is that correct?
That's right. I'm happy to provide therapy inside the state and some coaching for folks who are outside of the state as well.
Right. And when people want to get in touch with you, how do they do it?
Well, they can go to my website because there's an email link there, and the website is www.drbrianhooper.com.
That's drbrianhooper.com with no dot after the doctor. Or you can go
on
my gayhusbands.com links, and you'll find the link to Brian's website there.
Before
we end, do you have any good words of comfort for the upcoming month till we get back together again?
Oh, well, you know, believe in yourself. I mean, I really want to encourage the ladies to do that, to recognize that you have dignity, you have value, you have worth, you have given and given and given to family, to husband, to children in many cases. And just take a moment to appreciate yourself as you continue to put one foot in front of the other. Keep your head up and be honest and with yourselves.
And also, if you need a therapist for your husband, your ex-husband, your gay boyfriend, your other man, whatever your situation is, it doesn't have to be just for you. Dr. Hooper is wonderful at helping men come to terms with themselves and do the right thing by the women and getting them to recognize, you know, you for who you are and what they need to do as far as moving forward. So if they need a good therapist, Dr. Hooper is your best chance of getting the support that you need. So, Brian, I want to say have a wonderful month.
Hey, you too, Bonnie.
Thank you
always
so
a
much
pleasure.
For being part of this network. You know, we love you, and I love you.
I love you, too. I'm glad to be part of it.
All right, ladies, have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you soon. And have a good week.
Talk to you later,
too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.